Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR on the phone now. Live Nation concert guy Jimmy Copley. Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Jimmy!
Do you watch Netflix at all, or are you too busy for that stuff?
Well, no, I actually, it's funny, I never watched Netflix till 2 weekends ago, and 2 weekends ago, I watched the Springsteen show on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Okay.
But I've seen nothing else on Netflix. That was it.
There's a show that, if you have time, I would love you to see, The Fyre Fest.
Now, I have heard about that. I will definitely watch it over this weekend. At the latest.
Now, I'm guessing being in the business, you heard about it as it was unfolding.
Yes. A fellow tried to put a concert on, a festival on that had never done it before.
Right.
That is sort of amazing. That's like getting in an airplane and trying to fly it when you've never flown an airplane before.
That's why I tried to do that, but yeah.
Now, everything you can think could go wrong went wrong.
Nice.
And plus you have a guy who... his whole mission in life is just to get money out of people.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. He's a crook.
It was a disaster.
Right.
It's hard. I've done two of them. They're really hard to do.
When you did Watkins Glen, did you have any issues that you thought, oh, this potentially could be really bad?
Yes. The night before, the show was on Saturday, and on Friday at the sound check, we thought the capacity would be 150,000 people. We already had 200,000 people there, and I was in the midst of freaking out because I was told that the New York State Police closed down the freeway, the thruway. So when they closed down the thruway, I remember turning to Shelley and go, oh, my God, we don't know who's here and who's not here. We're going to have to give everybody their money back. And we put on this giant festival. I'm going broke. That's it.
Right.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And they did close it down for a very short while, but then they reopened it again. So that was a really bad moment. Second bad moment was when the gates came down, which happened overnight on Friday, because we were prepared for 150,000 people and 600,000 ended up showing up. So we were completely unable to control that crowd. And then the third problem was after the show, when I stood up, and I've got a picture of this in my office, when Shelley and I standing on the stage, sun up, and we look out in front, and we realized that we forgot to put garbage pails out.
Oh. Oops.
Right.
And there were 600,000 people's worth of garbage all over the field.
Oh, boy.
And I had promised this cleaning company they would clean it up for $5,000. And they came to me that morning and looked at it and said, we're not doing that. And this was 1973. $5,000 was a good amount of money back then.
Yeah.
So I'm negotiating, and I feel like it's the shutdown between Trump and the Democrats right now.
Right.
Because I'm saying I'm not paying more. I started moving up a little. They started moving. They wanted $100,000. We started negotiating. And the New York State Department of Health came in 2 days later, as we're still negotiating, and says, if you're not cleaned up in 24 hours, I'm arresting you. And they were down to $50,000, so I just had to shake their hand. So I went up from $5,000 to $50,000.
50 grand.
Wow.
In 1973 is like 500 grand now.
Yeah. Goodbye house.
Exactly.
With the amount of money you spent just to clean the field.
Mm.
Because I forgot to put garbage pails out.
Right.
It was my fault.
Right.
So I accepted it. It wasn't anything but my fault.
Yeah, otherwise we're in prison fest.
Yeah.
Prison fest. Right. Jimmy would be getting the best bands right. In jail.
One through the country, county jail. Jailhouse rocket, woo!
So there's a great picture. I'm looking at it in my office right now of me and Shelly on the stage and all this garbage. And there's a few people out in front. One guy's giving me the finger, or Shelly the finger. I don't know.
Probably Shelly.
Hey, over here. Bye, Shelly.
Jimmy, if you could text that to me, I'd love to post that.
Okay, I will. I'll definitely get it to you shortly.
July 28, 1973. So this is 4 years after Woodstock. And I have to believe this is the biggest concert festival to happen since Woodstock. So people who made Woodstock and didn't make Woodstock all wanted to go.
Yeah.
Well, it's bigger than Woodstock. Woodstock had 400,000. We had 600,000. I always say it's exactly the people, like you said. It's the people that didn't make Woodstock that wanted to do it. And it's also the older, the younger brothers or sisters of the people who went to Woodstock who heard how great it was. And they wanted their own, which became Watkins Glen, because it was a 4-year spread between the two.
This concert has its own Wikipedia page.
Really?
Wow.
It held the Guinness Book of World Records for a largest audience at a pop festival. How old were you when you put this on?
23.
23 years old.
Well,
kid genius.
Still wet behind the ears.
How?
Damn.
Do you know they recently found cars in the woods there?
Really?
Anything cool? That were abandoned.
Anything cool?
Yeah, no, because Watkins Glen is a racetrack,
right.
And recently some grounds crew were cleaning out some area or whatever in the woods, and they found a bunch of cars that were abandoned.
And people still sleeping in them. It's a concert over?
Did I miss
it? Rip Van Winkle, wake up!
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR. We're talking to Live Nation concert god Jimmy Coplick about Watkins Glen. He was 23. It was 1973. It's 4 years after Woodstock, and he puts together the world's most attended music festival. Jimmy, was Woodstock an influence in putting this concert together, or was it more what happened at Dillon Stadium in Hartford?
Oh, it was definitely something that we thought about. Woodstock absolutely was. Shelley did go to Woodstock because he managed Mountain, and Mountain played Woodstock, but I didn't go to Woodstock. And Woodstock didn't make money. It was the actual movie that made the money for the Woodstock owners, but the festival itself didn't. And Shelley and I went over numbers, and we really didn't think it was that hard. We paid the Allmans and the Dead $110,000 apiece, which was a lot of money back then, but, you know, it's really nothing now. We paid the band $75,000. So we had about $300,000 in talent expenses. We only charged $10 a ticket.
How many people of the 600,000 paid, and how many people got in for free?
It ended up that we, without us realizing, we had sold an extra 50,000 tickets, and because we forgot to add in the Connecticut ticket sales, we used Ticketron all over New York, and we didn't use Ticketron in Connecticut because we had our own ticket outlets.
Yeah.
Merle's Record Rack, Sticky Fingers, Rubber Match, all those great places that everybody remembers. So we said, you know what, let's not make our people go through Ticketron and pay the big fees, our Connecticut people. So we kept it through our outlets. So we kept telling everybody we sold 150,000 tickets, and then about a week after the show, we started adding everything up. We kept forgetting to add Connecticut in there. In Connecticut alone, we sold 50,000 tickets. So it ended up 200,000 out of the 600,000 paid.
It sounds like you guys made some money on that.
Yes, we did.
Good.
23.
Yes, we did. Is why still involved.
Who decides which band goes on in what order?
It's really up to the bands. We had set it up originally as the band would open up, the Allmans would play second, and the Dead would close the show. The band is the smallest act. The Allmans, although they were the hottest act, were not the biggest act at the time, and the Dead was the biggest act. So we sat down, and we all talked about it, and it all went kafooey, basically. The Dead wanted to open up the festival. They really were insisting on opening up the festival.
Now, was that because they just wanted to be done so they could party, or?
No, they felt that there was a certain magic to opening it up and welcoming everybody there and getting everybody moving. And they also thought the last part, being the closing act, people would be completely wasted from sitting outside all day, probably tripping or smoking or doing whatever they were doing, and they felt that they wouldn't go over as well.
No. That makes sense. You have your best audience
exactly
right then when
before
you start.
They're wasted.
Yeah,
yep.
So we opened it up. We said, okay, you guys are first. So then we had to decide who goes second and third. And the Allmans, from an ego standpoint, wanted to go third. So it became easy. So the band played in the middle, and the Allmans closed the show. And the Allmans were great. The Dead didn't kick. The sound check the day before was better. Most people agree with me on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't really kick. They never really got into full gear, I felt. The band set got interrupted by rain, because it rains at every festival. That's like a law.
Yeah, right. Something like that, yep.
Yeah, and it rained during the band set. But they were really good. And the Allmans, I thought, really kicked butt. They
what was that
really
like backstage?
Great.
The Allman Brothers, the Grateful Dead, and the band all sharing an area backstage.
A lot of weed.
And yes, among other things, it was a lot of weed. But there was also, and then we did a jam at the end. A bunch of guys got from
That's
each
nuts.
Band got up and did jammed a couple of songs.
The ones that could still stand up, definitely, yeah.
And you got the idea for that part from the Hartford show, right? The jam?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. In August of 72... we had the Dead play an afternoon show, and the Allman Brothers were playing Gaelic Park in the Bronx, and they asked if they could come up and see the Dead. They came up. It was Barry Oakley and Dickie Betts, if I remember correctly, the only two, and they came up, and they jammed with the Dead. At the end, they did Johnny B. Goode at the end.
That's awesome.
Wild.
And I remember, and I love both bands, and I remember turning to Shelley and going, we got to put them together somewhere. And that's how it started to evolve into the festival.
Now, fast forward to the festival. Was there anyone backstage that you thought might get up on stage with these guys but never did?
No, it was back in those days. Nobody was going up to Watkins Glen. The only way to get there would be by helicopter or private plane.
Right.
The closest airport was Elmira, and you had to fly out of LaGuardia to get to Elmira because nobody else would fly to Elmira. Otherwise, you had to fly to Syracuse. And with all the traffic, there was no way.
This started another trend for you where that was Watkins Glen's last concert, and you also did that to Yale Bowl.
Well, it's not Watkins Glen's last concert because
he's
done their festival shows up there.
That's right.
And the new Woodstock is going there.
Right. Right. So
I didn't ruin that side, but I did ruin it for a long time. At one point I thought of doing it again on the 25th anniversary, which was 1998. And I was told by them I'm unwelcome to go there.
Oh, that's harsh. Yeah.
Right. I am unwelcome.
That's harsh.
We remember you.
Yeah. No Hallmark card for you.
Just another place that wouldn't let me in.
Right. You left a dent in it.
Well, you know it's a good party when they say don't come back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't want to see me. Forget about the concert. Yeah. You're right. They didn't want to have any concert idea coming.
But Fish
does only 30,000 people. That's they limit it to 30,000 a show. So it's not the same thing. It's just a big outdoor concert. It's not really size wise. A festival in Woodstock will be
another one of the things they mention on this Wikipedia page.
What's that?
Is a pirate radio station out of Hartford operated for 7 days from the site of the concert. Do you remember this?
Yeah, it was from New Haven, actually.
Oh, really?
And it was manned by some of the PLR guys.
Really?
Seriously?
Wow.
Yep.
Who
was Stoneman part of that?
Rick Allison was part of it.
I can picture.
Holy
him.
Crap!
I can picture Rick.
So they pull in with a camper fully equipped with radio gear.
Right.
They go into the concert's press area for 5 days. They were accepted by other media as a Canadian radio station.
Well, look at Rick. Rick looks Canadian.
This is according to the Wikipedia page.
That's awesome.
Broadcasting commenced almost immediately after arrival on the site and consisted of live disc jockeys. 10 people were involved in the pirate station, including several prominent Hartford DJs. Now we know New Haven.
It's New Haven.
Yep.
As opening day approached, station personnel interviewed Bill Graham, Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead, and various musicians in the studio camper. Were you part of that? Did you go in there and do interviews?
Yes. In fact, if I remember correctly, it was a white van, although...
Yep. There's a picture of it on the...
Nice. Oh, really? Yeah, it was a white van. Yeah, it was a camper van sort of thing.
Nice. Yeah, and there's a Jeep Wrangler... attached to it.
Nice.
So
yeah, it probably has license plate Rick on it.
Yeah.
That was their mobile unit, the Wrangler.
So apparently the state liked it because the New York Mounted Police were thrilled to have the station broadcasting from the site. And so in exchange for free food, the radio station relayed New York State Police announcements.
Nice. So they finagled.
Hey, man.
They finagled.
Yeah. So the cops would come and bring them sandwiches or whatever, and then they would say, hey, come on.
What's that smell in here?
Right.
Amazing.
So they gave traffic updates on congestion every 30 minutes with the police.
That's awesome.
Unreal.
That's good finagling.
Unreal. That seems like a movie.
It does.
That Jimmy, you have
does.
Like 4 or 5 movies.
Yeah, you got a whole series, man.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to take a movie of Watkins Glen, but the Dead wouldn't let us and the Almonds wouldn't let us. And we wanted to do it because that's where Woodstock made all the money. So we said, let's do a movie. And it would have been fun. That would not have been a Woodstock, of course, but it would have been a good movie for people to see. And we also wanted to record it and put out a record. And the band said, nope, no recording. And unbeknownst to us, they both secretly recorded their sets.
Wow, buzzkills.
And did they release albums?
The Almonds released one song on their live album. It came out in like 76, the album. The Come and Go Blues, I think, is the song that they put from Watkins Glen. That's how I found out they recorded that. And yes, the Dead, there's a lot of Soundcheck Dead. And they did record the regular show, too. But they have never released the regular show. But I've heard the Soundcheck. They played me the Soundcheck.
unbelievable at age 23. You put on one of the world's most famous concerts.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah, amazing. No kidding.
That's amazing.
Living legend.
Yep.
Jimmy Coplick, thanks for coming on, brother. Appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take it easy.
You too, man.